Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Internet of Things in the Home. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Justin Ruiz from ALA Networks and Alex Glaser from Harbor Research. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of presentation, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, let's run down some important features of viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the material. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material in question and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you. Our speakers today are Justin Ruiz and Alex Glaser. Justin is a product marketing manager with ALA Networks, which is a leading enterprise software platform as a service for the Internet of Things provider. Justin works extensively with OEMs and technology partners who serve a variety of markets, including health and fitness, HVAC, consumer electronics, home appliances, and home controls. Justin is responsible for ALA's agile IoT platform and products. He has unique insight and expertise with the technologies enabling the IoT, as well as trends and opportunities that are driving this movement. Justin holds a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration and Management from San Jose State University. Alex Glaser is a director with Harbor Research. He has broad client experience in new opportunity assessment and strategy development for smart systems and services. His research and consulting work has focused on foundational industries at the core of the smart systems and Internet of Things opportunity, including building control, smart home infrastructure, industrial, transportation, and telecom services. Alex has also conducted several studies in the core technology and IoT, including value added in systems applications like asset and hardware and software required to develop smart systems. Alex is also helping to lead Harbor's Smart Systems Lab program, which is a real-world laboratory where organizations can design, prototype, and test new business models for delivering these smart systems and services value. Gentlemen, we thank you for joining us today. Alex will be kicking off the presentation. Alex, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everyone for attending today. Just to get started, to give you a little bit of background on Harbor Research, we were founded in 1984 and have been focusing on smart systems and what we now call the Internet of Things since the early 2000s. When you think about the Internet of Things, this is not a new subject. This has been around for the last 20 to 25 years in different industries, and the concepts that are in play are what really have been around for those 20 years. But before we jump into that, a little bit more on Harbor. We are a research and consulting firm focused on looking at new business opportunities. We work with startups, innovators, technology suppliers, and a lot of product manufacturers. And if we jump forward to think what I was mentioning about earlier about the foundations and why we think this has been around for so long, the real truth is that when you think about sensors, connectivity, and people and processes, we've been sensing things since the 80s on the grid. We've been connecting with wireline or field bus networks since the early 90s, late 80s. And so the idea of sensing and connectivity have been around for quite some time. What's starting to shift, we believe, is really what people are starting to do with the data that they're unlocking from these devices. So once I provide sensing, so I can look at acceleration, tilt, I can look at flow, pressure, temperature, I then connect it with, say, Ethernet or Wi-Fi or a cellular network if it's a mobile device or vehicle. I then place those digitized inputs onto a network, and now what happens is I'm able to unlock a series of processes. So when we think of supply chain management, or we think of asset management, or remote monitoring, these are all different applications that were available once we were able to unlock the data that we had in these devices. So just with a little bit of context, that's how we really see the Internet of Things, is once you send something, you connect it, and you access that data to create applications, you're then increasing efficiencies and reducing unplanned downtime. Now let's shift to the focus of what we're here to talk about today. So that is the smart home. And so the smart home itself, similar to the Internet of Things, has been around for a while. If you think about the late 90s, early 2000s, there were really, really expensive systems you could put into your home to turn up the blinds automatically, or you could have a little tablet that sits on your table and you could control your home theater. These types of systems have been around for a while, but I think what's really changed over the last, say, 10 years are two things. One, smartphones have really created an HMI for all of the devices in our home. And when we say HMI, we mean human-machine interface, so a way to actually access devices. And the second thing that's happened is you're really seeing the cost of technology go down. And so we can put sensing into more things. We can allow for more processing capabilities inside of, say, a refrigerator. That's something that we hadn't seen before. And so because of those two trends, we're starting to see different applications arise. So when we think about the smart home, we really see it in seven different areas. So there's power, so that might be solar or conventional monitoring of power into the home. Appliances, so everybody talks about their coffee machine talking to their, refrigerator to order more milk because you've had so many cups of coffee this month. There's your home entertainment system, so your smart TVs and stereos like Sonos. There's climate, which is HVAC, so you know, new devices like Nest coming to the market. Honeywell's released a new thermostat that's connected. Then there's security and fire and lighting. And so all of these different areas really provide for adoption of new technologies and new connected devices. And so when we think about connecting devices, we really see this market growing at a 15% compound annual growth rate over the next, 3 to 5 years, and growing somewhere between $30 and $35 billion. Now, again, with numbers and projecting market size, I just want to say one caveat that this is one of those instances where you really don't know exactly the rate of adoption. You know that people are going to adopt these technologies, but you just don't know exactly how fast. So whether it's 2018 or 2020, when we get to that 35, 50 billion market size, we don't know exactly, but we know that it's growing quite rapidly. So moving forward, we really think that there's, four avenues into smart home management systems. So if you think about all of those different applications we were just talking about, there's home automation, which is essentially allowing for your home to be able to automate itself based on, whether it's actions used on your phone to say, hey, turn on my lights when I'm 25 yards away, open my garage door, and turn on my favorite classical music only on Tuesdays and Thursdays for the second and third week of the month because that's when I'm most stressed at work. If you think about smart security, this is one that we think is very important because everyone wants to be able to have the smart door lock or the connected camera, drop cam, for example, to be able to say who's at my door when I don't want to go down and open it. I can just click a button and my cousin can come in. We believe that infotainment due to tablets and different types of devices, Sonos, we really see that as an area of control. So if why not be able to control the rest of my home through my infotainment? So I'm sitting on my couch and I want to be able to, turn on the lights in my bedroom because I'm going up there in 2 minutes. Or I want to be able to make sure that the garage door is closed before I head up to bed. Or I just got home and I'm sitting down to watch the football game and I don't really want to get up because I want to just order the pizza and keep moving. The other area is obviously home energy management, and this goes back to kind of the number one cost or way to reduce your cost in the home is through energy. So whether that's through lighting, whether that's through these new appliances that have a lot of processing power and therefore consume a lot of energy, we have to figure out a way to manage the energy much more efficiently to show the consumer the cost reduction they can obtain. So whether that's HVAC, lighting, et cetera, there's several different types of devices that can really, reduce that energy by monitoring them and connecting them. Now, one of the things that I really want to point out, and this is before we jump into the next slide, is that in order to do these different, types of functions or applications or drive these avenues into the smart home, you're not going to be able to do it by yourself. You're not going to be able to say, hey, I'm going to go build an app and control all of this. I'm going to be the Google Home. I'm going to be the Apple Home. I'm going to be the Samsung Home. And I'm going to go drive and own every last device and every last thing, because consumers don't really buy predictably like that. There's a fact out there that 50% of consumers buy a different piece of white good, so a white good is a washer and dryer, from a different brand every time they go to purchase. There's no retention there. So you can't just say, oh, well, I'm just going to sell every product in the home and expect that to work. What you need to do is partner. And so that brings us to our next slide. Who are the key players in the smart home market that we think really are driving new and interesting sort of offerings, and players like Ayla Networks are really out there driving a platform for interoperability across these systems and allowing you for managing remotely. But then there's also a whole host of OEMs. So whether it's Bosch, Honeywell, Fujitsu, Schneider, Tyco, these are all these Whirlpool, for example, these are all these players who've been manufacturing these products for the last 30 years and saying, you know, we've put connected devices in the market. We understand what's going to be required to connect the device, but now what? What's that next phase? And so we really believe the next phase is really trying to understand how you can collaborate with partners and how you can work to achieve those partnerships to drive and address different applications within the market. So that takes us to our next slide that really hones in on some core players in the market who are actually driving towards different avenues. So for example, Nest wanting to just move away from, you know, only providing you a way to change your temperature in your home, but also, say, acquiring Dropcam and being able to provide security. Or, for example, the Apple HomeKit, being able to have a platform where different players can connect through Apple's OS and actually drive automation. So we really see different players coming in from different avenues and really trying to drive adoption in these different areas. And so, you know, when you see ADT make plays around eye control and different types of automation, and you really try and understand which partnerships are driving which avenues of the smart home, that's when you really understand one thing, that, wow, there are a lot of players trying to converge on this space. And we believe that that is one of the problems, is that there is a lot of players trying to take single point solutions and trying to drive into this space and say, oh, well, I'm just going to take it and run with it. So if you think about, say, a Verizon or a Comcast or an AT&T saying, we're just going to run the whole home, the issue is they need platform players. They need a way to actually work with all these other devices and really drive that collaboration mechanism. So if you think about the different players that are converging on this, we break it out into really four or five main categories. So there's connected appliance manufacturers like the dishwasher or TVs. There's connected home or energy management, health and wellness, safe and security. These are players that are, you know, coming from their point solutions. And then you have, you know, home technologies. So if you think about home energy management systems, or the other area is carriers and, you know, cable providers. So if we think about the Verizons and AT&Ts, they've had an opportunity to take over the smart home for the last 15 years, but really haven't. If you think about the set-top box, for example, that is the most powerful computing device as far as processing capabilities inside the home, but yet you're not seeing them take the next steps quickly. Now, they are starting to do it through innovations in cable labs and things like that, but they've had this opportunity available to them for many years, and they never took the steps to really drive, and that's why you're seeing startups like Notion and Birdie and these different players who are starting to come into the market with the opportunity, because they see the opportunity for connected devices. So the last couple of slides are really talking about barriers and challenges, and so as we mentioned at the outset, looking at new growth opportunities, we really think there's a series of drivers, impacts, and levers that are really going to help the smart home opportunity progress. And again, just to reiterate, you know, the smart home has been around a while. It's going to go through several waves of evolution. But to name a few, we really see You know, the ability of new wireless communications, so Bluetooth low energy, for example, coming out with the – or Wi-Fi releasing a low energy standard in the next 3 years or so, 2 years. These are different areas where there's connectivity being introduced that is tailored to the smart home to help improve the performance and connectivity of these devices. But one thing I just want to point out is that there are a lot of standards out there today. So whether it's Thread, Zigbee, you name it, there are a ton, AllJoin. They all have a horse in the race. And that's leading to sort of what we would call as, you know, a future of fragmentation, which kind of threatens interoperability if you think about it, because every device is going to need a gateway, and how many gateways do I really want to have? I'd like to be able to have interoperability across my systems so my appliances can talk. Couple other things to bring up, network device security threats. We obviously have seen, you know, with the Jeep being hacked last year, there's this whole story right now around encryption in the market about, you know, should Apple have to give up encryption to the government? Well, that has a play into your passwords just like it would have into your home. And there is definitely some very serious security and privacy questions at hand that might slow adoption. We think the smart home is here to stay, but it might slow adoption in some different areas. Another thing to point out is that, you know, if you think about energy, so smart lighting is a good example of where we've seen a lot of innovation with LEDs to drive reduced consumption. But what we need to do is take it to the next level and say, you know, for example, with solar, put savings back into the consumer's pocket that are very evident and not just, oh, you're going to get 3%, make it 15% and really show the value so that consumers are willing to invest in these technologies. As far as some of the impacts, we think that there is a lot of noise in the market about the smart home. So, you know, if you go to CES, for example, you can't even make it through the entire floor because there's literally so many devices and so many people touting the next best thing in the smart home. We think that there is sort of this chasm that needs to be crossed into what are the products that really survive and really drive, you know, usefulness for smart home consumers, and not just, you know, I'm going to buy it because it's cool. I'm going to buy it because it improves efficiency in my home, reduce my savings, but also improves my experience, for example. Another area that we think is pretty interesting as far as impacts is if you look at different regions, for example. So in Germany, they have the highest per capita number of connected devices in the home today. And if you look at the U.S., very developed economy, there's a lot of individuals who are tech savvy adopting technologies. But if you look at, say, you know, the Asia Pac region, so take India, take China, where there's a lot of greenfield, and you see the rise of the middle class, we really think that's an opportunity where you're going to see massive adoption of smart home technologies over the next 10 years because of the opportunity that exists in those countries and the growing population. Couple of levers to point out. We think that, you know, we really need to expand offerings to solve beyond just a single point. So if I'm a product manufacturer, going back, don't just look at this as I'm only going to solve one problem. I'm only going to solve what I came in as the market. Think about partnering with others and you know, other providers to be able to expand your services and offerings to drive that type of traction with your customers. Because that's the way you're going to be able to not only drive insight into product usage and kind of that ecosystem of data, but also try and drive retention with those customers in a way that really lets you demand or control how products are conceived into the future. Because it's all about the data and the way you leverage data to think about new product development, new service offerings, and really the smart services that your customers are requiring. They may not even know they're requiring them, but you might be, you know, in tune with your data in a way that allows you to really understand how devices are being used. To my last slide, the last thing to bring up is just that, you know, we believe that there's restraints and drivers for smart home adoption. So I mentioned a few earlier, but if you think about the mismatch between point solution value and pricing, this is an area where we think over time, you know, you will start to see the demand for pricing to come down because technology, the cost of technology is decreasing. So in return, we think that where the real revenue lies in the smart home are services. So whether it's remote asset management, energy management, security management, these are actual services that people are willing to pay for beyond just the cost of the device. Because with most devices over time, the cost of the device is just the entry into the door. It's the services contracts where the real revenue is derived for product manufacturers. Another area is obviously privacy and security. I don't think I need to go over this that much, but it is important to note that this is a restraint. And whether you're looking at it from a device standpoint, an application standpoint, or the network, you have to secure those different areas with different technologies and really drive focus in the different areas. So whether it's the network, app, or device, it's important to keep your eye on what's the secure implications and how can we potentially build a network within the home that allows for the consumer to really control that security. If you think about drivers, obviously with the boom of millennials, we all know that individuals are very interested in these technologies. Again, just to mention the smartphone being sort of the HMI, that has led to a lot of adoption. If you think about growing energy and cost efficiency, there are a lot of individuals who are concerned and interested in residential solar, and you're seeing a lot of players like LightSource out of the UK who are trying to think about different ways to actually provide unique energy models to really drive adoption of residential solar, whether it's electrical vehicle charging in the future. How are we going to be able to do that potentially in the home? Batteries, what's the implications of that in the home? So these are all technologies that we believe through the grid are going to kind of work their way into the home. So players like Eaton or ChargePoint are starting to think about how can they actually provide multiple applications or services with their point solution. So to wrap it up, just to bring it kind of to high level, smart home is here. It's here to stay. I think it has multiple evolutions to go, though. Just to highlight, you know, we do have a lot of products being pushed to the market, but what really comes back to is services and how can we drive services for the consumer that allow them to enhance their experience and user experience in their home and continue to improve and allow for adoption of these Internet of Things technologies. So with that, I hope I was able to cover everything we were supposed to. And Justin, I'll pass it along to you.
Hey, thanks. Great, Alex. There was a lot of good points there. Hi, everybody. My name is Justin Rees. I'm a product marketing manager here at AL Networks. So before we really dig into, I guess, what we're seeing in terms of pitfalls of IoT, as well as a smart home, and more importantly, how to succeed in both of those spaces, I'd like to kind of set the stage here and really introduce our company to provide a little bit more context. So AL Networks is an end-to-end IoT platform for manufacturers. We cater to the manufacturers who are actually building the smart things that will go into the home. Our belief is that there are a lot of must-haves within the world of IoT across networking, security, being able to connect them to great applications, being able to use the actual data to bring in additional services. But all of those are kind of from an architecture perspective, things that no matter what you want to build, whether it's a refrigerator, a stove, a smart plug, those are things that you have to solve for. But from our perspective, those don't add extra value to your product in that these are things that you need to do regardless, right? So our goal as a platform provider in the IoT for manufacturers is to solve for those problems, solve for things like networking, security, scale, being able to build out the hooks to tie into different services to help you learn, and as you learn, being able to change what your devices are doing. And let our manufacturer customers really focus on what they do best, and then is using that data to build smarter things. So with that, I'm going to jump into this first slide here. So as to Alex's point, the smart home is here to stay, which is actually really great to see. Connectivity and being able to hook things up to the cloud into smartphone apps is nothing new, right? That's something that's been talked about for a long, long time. In the home, unfortunately, it's been something that we've only seen in the high-end piece of the smart home. The industrial space and the commercial spaces have been doing it for, you know, a long time here. But as Alex pointed out, things like technology is changing and costs actually, you know, coming down. It makes sense to add connectivity to things like home appliances, right? So we'll definitely start seeing a lot more use cases within the home. And I guess the last point that I would like to make here on this slide is with the idea that the smart home is here to stay, there's going to be a huge, huge fight amongst these big brands, you know, people like the HomeKit or Nest, or works with Nest, right? A lot of these major brands like Samsung are going to be kind of vying to be the application for the smart home, right? Nobody wants 50 different apps for 50 different things. And the interesting piece is that it's going to take a lot of work, not only on the technology side, but from a marketing and a business side to really kind of fight that and see who will win. So that's just something to keep an eye out for. And now, so after really talking to, you know, how the IoT is huge and smart home is here to stay, we actually quite often still have to have that conversation of, well, why smart things, right? Why do I need to have a smart stove? Does the consumer really need to have a smartphone application? And our answer to that is, you know, yes, we believe that the IoT does have kind of a value proposition for the end consumer in terms of new features, functionality. But in actuality, for us, from our perspective, the IoT is here for the manufacturers, right? It's going to help them be able to improve how they build their things based on having access to the product usage, being able to roll out new kind of revenue streams, being able to provide additional value-added services, and so on, right? So from our perspective, the IoT is really here to provide extra data on how their product's being used, which is nothing that these manufacturers have ever had before, right? And kind of with that said, take lighting, for instance. The whole point, I guess, the thought behind the smart home is really not just to have a point solution, right? So if you're talking about a lighting system, the ability to turn it on and off simply from a smartphone mobile application is really, I guess, after a few weeks, it isn't really that fun, right? The whole thought around the smart home is the ability to create an end-to-end system where your product can now become smarter and become more flexible, right? So, which is a great segue into the next slide here of, well, okay, so if we're talking about why smart appliances, and the answer is because now your point solution is really becoming an end-to-end system, the answer is, well, what technologies and what things are happening in the market that really makes that kind of happen? And the answer is the power of the cloud, right? So now being able to have a virtual replica of your device in the cloud that is infinitely robust and massively flexible, you can now have a smart plug that not only has on-off capabilities, but you can pull in different services, but more importantly, based on the actual usage that you're seeing from your products in the field, you can actually change them, right? And kind of going around the diagram here from left to right just to show you the flexibility and how you can add in different services, if you were to start on the left there and talk about an HVAC system, a virtual replica has the ability to really tie in different services. So if you're talking about HVAC, for instance, you can tie it into a DR type system or some kind of premium warranty service, something like a Service Max or things like that, or even into your own internal tools, right? Being able to optimize where that data is going, being able to plug into things like your support tools to allow your customer support reps to really kind of proactively look at what the product is doing and being able to provide additional services. And then also making them smarter, right? Making your smart connected products smarter by pulling in different sources of data from outside clouds, right? So if you're talking about an HVAC system again, or even a lawn sprinkler system, you can do very cool things and set more robust rules. As an example, if you have an irrigation system, you can pull in the actual feeds of what the local kind of conditions are in terms of rain, temperature, things like that, and actually really program the irrigation system to be smarter, right? So if it's raining outside, don't turn on, right? So things like that. And going more to the right side here, the Internet of Things is all about the data, and the data that you get will show you features and functionality and things that your consumers are doing that maybe you didn't think of. And the virtual device is going to be very important in this regard is because you will want it to change it, right? So now that you have this flexible kind of virtual replica of what your thing is in the cloud, that data becomes more valuable, right? You can actually not only learn what they're doing, but you can implement those changes into the cloud and push it down to your things. And lastly, this last part really actually talks into what I was talking about in the first slides of the Internet of Things will be huge, but at the same time, there's going to be a number of big brands kind of competing to be at the heart of the smart home, right, to be that app. And the flexibility of the virtual device really solves this problem for manufacturers, right? Today, manufacturers are solved with the problem of, or faced with the problem of, do I work just with Nest? Do I work with HomeKit? If I want to work with both, how do I have to architect my solution to actually do that, right? So with this virtual device, you're infinitely flexible and you're massively robust. You can tie into different services and you can change on the fly. And kind of going into the challenges that we're seeing from manufacturers' perspective in the IoT, there's a lot of kind of things going on in the IoT, right? Being able to design and architect a secure, scalable, reliable cloud solution, being able to create great mobile applications as well as reliable things, right? Making sure that they're supposed to be doing what they are doing, networking, security, things like that. It's a lot of different expertise. You need to make sure that all those pieces are actually working, right? And it's not just the product features or capabilities. It's also the actual features of the actual platform itself, right? Making sure that all those pieces are working at once and doing what they're supposed to be. Now going to the next in regards to device interoperability. So in the last presentation, there's a lot of good points made around this, right? So there's a lot of technology standards that are coming into the mix, but at this moment, it's actually making things more confusing, I think, for manufacturers. The question of, well, which kind of technology should I build into my platform or into my smart thing, and not knowing if that's going to be the right choice, right? I don't want to build myself or paint myself into a corner that I can't get out of, right? So device interoperability is going to be one of those things that in the future I definitely think we'll see. There's a lot of technology things that need to be consolidated, as well as things in the market from a business and marketing perspective that need to be figured out in terms of branding and things like that and how you approach it. We do agree that that's where the market's going. Nobody, like we've been saying, nobody wants 50 different apps for 50 different things. So this will happen, but it's a huge, huge challenge right now for these manufacturers. And going into the cloud, cloud architecture is actually a huge component of these IoT solutions in that historically a lot of things that we've seen shipped to the market from our perspective have been designed with a certain set of features and functionality in mind, right? So they've kind of set data schema in regards to, oh, well, I want to build a fridge and my fridge will have features 1 through 5 and they ship it to the field and they're kind of constrained by the architecture that they've built in the cloud of how they support that long term. Because like we've been saying, in the IoT, it's all about the data and the data that you receive will show you some insights in how you can optimize and change new features and functionality. And the cloud architecture really needs to be able to scale with what you learn and what you want to build in the future. Security and scale, we can't talk about this enough. Security is something that, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing to solve in that you don't want to build a IoT solution that's too secure in a sense that it will actually hurt the customer's experience, right? We hear a lot of references about seatbelts in cars, right? Being able to come up with a way that is easy for the user to implement and use day in, day out, but also not kind of restrain them from how they work with that thing. And then going into scalability, the issue of not only being able to support a massive amount of things in the field with the least amount of resources in the cloud. It's also being able to support things like, well, what if you want to deploy software patches to your entire fleet that's out there? So being able to address scalability issues across features and functionality within the actual IoT solution that you've built or that you want to use, those are all scalability things that need to be addressed. And going into mobile experience from our perspective is actually one of the key components within the smart home. When these consumers are buying connected products today, I think what's been mentioned is the HMI now that you have with your smart home application. So the actual point of contact with the brand and with that thing is now being moved to those smartphones or tablets or maybe a web application. And if that user experience is poor, you can have the best IoT product in the world, but customers will not engage with it and they will not want to use it long term, right? So from our perspective, this is something that needs to be thought about from day one, and it needs to be something that, you know, people want to invest in. And lastly, just kind of wrapping up all these different pieces, is there's a lot of expertise required across the board, whether it's the hardware side, whether it's the cloud, and whether it's the mobile component. So we do see a lot of manufacturers or customers and people that we've worked with in the past that have kind of tried to work with different vendors for different pieces and try to, you know, kind of put together a solution that really has three parts, right? And from our perspective, it really needs to be a single layer platform approach that has software in all three pieces. And kind of going into this next slide. So talking more about the smart home challenges that we're seeing outside of just the IoT challenges. So smart home presents a number of challenges that are actually pretty hard to solve in terms of these manufacturers are great at building things, right? And this end-to-end system now that's being built by the IoT is really presenting new kind of DNA challenges for these companies, right? So the very first one actually starts on the store shelves, right? A lot of retail channels and sales channels that these manufacturers are using aren't really optimized today for these types of sales, right? So how do you really kind of communicate what the value of a connected product is by putting it on a store shelf and having it inside, you know, inside of a box, right? So there's a store here in the Bay Area, actually, that I think the co-founders actually used to work at Nest, and they actually are putting together a smart kind of retail store. And what they're doing is they're taking all these smart kind of things and putting and trying to set them up in the store. And you can actually see all the functionality working. You can see how they work with different systems, and you can get the full effect, right? So I think manufacturers are having a really tough time and trying to position these through the actual channels that they have in place today. And going into structural changes, of course, because you're going from a point solution to more of an end-to-end system, there's structural changes that need to happen within the organization in terms of ongoing support in the back end. You know, how do you layer some ongoing new value-added services? A lot of manufacturers are able to kind of get that front end going in terms of their when they ship these smart things to market in regards to marketing and the initial customer support. But the ongoing customer support and being able to kind of identify what those additional use cases are, it seems to be pretty tough, which ties into the next challenge related to the consumer space is there seems to be a tough time kind of trying to identify what the ongoing value propositions for some of these products will be. Being able to really sell the idea that, hey, I want to provide you an ongoing subscription and an ongoing relationship for a smart home system, whether, you know, it's lighting and things like that, which ties into the bottom point there of consumers are not really convinced. It's going to be a tough sell for some of these products in terms of do you really want to set the price higher or provide an ongoing subscription fee for, let's say, a smart plug. I think those types of value propositions will be hard, but the IoT also provides the answer in being able to leverage the flexibility and being able to make your services more robust. It's definitely possible. It's just kind of trying to figure out what that mix is. And going back to the need for technology standards, so we've talked about this multiple times as well. It's interesting in that in the smart home, there's a number of communication protocols that are being talked about. They're all trying to, you know, solve the same kind of problem. But they're also providing a lot of confusion, I think, to manufacturers. So I think there needs to be some consolidation. We're starting to see that, but I think it'll be a few years before we actually really see that shake out. So why connected products? So really trying to recap, I know we talked a lot about the challenges, but now we really want to rope it back into, well, why are you doing this again? And the reason is because now you have access to how your product's being used. You can actually differentiate your product. You can optimize the product development. And two examples of that is even being able to do some kind of A/B testing, right? So if you have a mobile application or if there's a console, let's say, on your lighting system, being able to actually push down certain versions of maybe the application and the features to really identify what features are being used, and if you like the response, being able to roll that out to the entire fleet. Or from a differentiation perspective, we've seen multiple customers who have shipped things to the market with an idea of what features and functionality that the market would actually be drawn to, only to find that it's the opposite, right? One example was a smart plug. They were finding that smart plugs were actually being used for porch lights, right? So being able to introduce a feature of being able to turn off sunset and sunrise, right? So things like that, being able to really hone in on what the data is saying and being able to use that to differentiate your products as well as optimize features and functionality. And lastly, the last two points, being able to generate new revenue. So being able to use that data to provide value-added services, being able to provide things like premium warranty and customer support, or even just the sheer fact that now the main point of contact with your thing is now on a very sleek UI on smartphones that all people have. So keys to success in the smart home. So just wrapping it up from our perspective, really what needs to happen from a manufacturer's point of view to ship a successful smart home thing is one is being able to identify use cases and uncover the true value of your product, right? And this actually ties into the last point on the slide of try not to make it too complex to start, right? The point of the IoT is that you'll be able to actually leverage actual usage data from the field. So it's no longer really, I guess, a gut instinct or being able to use focus groups and things like that amongst the actual company. It's really shipping things and seeing how it performs and learning what customers want and being able to change it that way, not trying to do too much on the front end. And because of IoT, it's no longer a point solution. And because of that, during the development process, this needs to be looked at from an end-to-end system perspective. And I think if you were to solve all four of these points, you'll have a pretty successful launch. And wrapping it up before I pass it on back to Kurt, the IoT is fragmented and will remain fragmented. There's a lot of different manufacturers producing different things in the field. A lot of them are using different communication protocols, and they're all solving different problems. So from a technology perspective, it's going to be a challenge to get these things to all work together, get them on network securely so they scale, and it needs to be something that's actually thought about quite often. As devices connect, they become part of an end-to-end system and should be designed as such. So this goes back to the last slide of, you know, don't try to do too much in terms of creating an all-in-one point solution. You can actually move a lot of the features and functionality to the cloud, making it more robust, but at the end of the day, you won't paint yourself into a corner and your device will actually be more efficient. You'll have less resources on the edge, but you can actually still leverage and you won't lose anything by going to the cloud. The last point here, these connected systems are opening the door to additional services and business models. The IoT is changing really what it means to build things and ship them to market. We see these things like, you know, Chromebooks and e-books and things like that where the actual things themselves become a shell and you're actually selling more of the services and ongoing features and functionality as opposed to, okay, you're buying this once and that's going to really kind of stay the way it is long term. So that's it for me. At this point, I'm going to go ahead and pass it on back to Kurt.
Great. Thanks a lot, Justin and Alex. A lot of great information, and we got plenty of time for Q&A, so we've got some good questions, and please continue to ask those questions while we have the expertise here. Let's start with Alex. If someone is trying to if they have a home controller that and they're researching use cases, they want to know how they can leverage your lab for testing, proving out the design both technically and maybe within an ecosystem.
Great question. And just to give everybody a little bit, 2 seconds on the lab, it's mainly focused on business models. So if we were testing use cases, it would be much more about leveraging partners to look at those use cases to understand the controller and the devices around the controller. But there is definitely a way to do that, and feel free to reach out directly to me at aglazer@harborresearch.com, and we can talk further about ways that you can engage in the lab.
Okay, great. Justin, there's someone who's wondering if security is getting the attention that it needs, both in the cloud and even more importantly at the endpoints. I suppose you hear a lot about medical industry and IoT where records and HIPAA laws and those kinds of things take into effect. What about the home? Is it just as important there? And how do you approach that kind of issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I definitely think security is really one of those key pieces that needs to be addressed within the smart home. We have those conversations all the time. So I think the answer is yes. A lot of smart people are trying to address, you know, how do you create a very secure ecosystem within the home that makes all the products easy to use and they talk to each other, but at the same time you don't compromise customer experience. So I think, you know, historically the way that we perceive it internally with our company is, you know, smart things, the security around them is not different than anything that we've seen before in terms of being able to connect things like your smartphone or your laptop. They are harder to do depending on the actual resources that your thing has, but there are best practices that the industry has used, you know, things like, you know, if you bank online, right, there's encryption and different technologies in place there, being able to, you know, just do things from a best practices perspective of not storing customer identifiable information on the end node, right? So things like that. So I think, yes, this is definitely something that's being talked about. There's, you know, things that we can be doing as an industry to adopt different technology standards that will make it easier to get these things in place, but I think that's an ongoing process.
Right. Yeah, I suppose it needs to be both at the application layer and within the embedded devices themselves to prevent, you know, accidental or malicious behavior within water heaters or lighting or what have you, I suppose.
Exactly. I mean, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes back to the sharing of the information, right? So if you have mobile applications, you know, and you're doing things like role-based access control, where do those keys reside and how often do they refresh? You know, but also from a resource perspective, what kind of information do you want to be shareable and for how long? So, yeah, there's a lot of different security questions within the smart home.
Right.
The only comment I would just add real quick is I think Justin's right that, you know, from a reactive standpoint, we're doing a good job. I think the shift eventually will be to proactive security, trying to be a step ahead of those who are trying to hack. And I don't think we're completely there yet because of the adoption of those technologies are not fully, you know, adopted yet. But that'd be my only comment.
Yeah, in terms of what you're seeing in the lab, are you seeing embedded devices that are taking security in within the IoT more? Or are they still thinking more traditional, you know, safeguards with my product in a silo?
I think it depends on the device and the context of where the device is being implemented. If you take the grid, for example, there has been advanced security mechanisms in play there for quite some time, none that we can really talk about here, but that's an example of where people are very aware of the risk at play. But, you know, I think, you know, just take the example of the Jeep being hacked last year. I mean, I don't think everybody completely understands the implications of, you know, one potential area or leak in a system can lead to an entire operation being hacked or accessed. So, you know, take Target. I mean, they broke through the HVAC system through a systems integrator's, you know, back-end system to access all of credit card data for Target's consumers. So that's an example where it may not be something you're considering right spot on, but that over, you know, as you get into the network, it allows access to a lot of very important data.
Right. Great. Justin, here's a great question. Here's someone who's trying to balance between mass market adoption versus providing all those bells and whistles to the product design to make the tech-savvy adopters happy. How do companies, or how do companies create these solutions kind of strike a good balance between a long life cycle that's easy to use yet providing neat whistles for the tech-savvy users?
Yeah, so I think we've seen both approaches, right? I mean, I've worked with customers who have done both of those, right? We've worked with the customer who wants to start with a very simple set of features and functionality and really rely on how the product is being used, right? Or there's other customers who really have an idea of, hey, let's really get to market and really make this thing pretty interesting so people want to buy it and get it on network, but then they don't really know where to go from there, right? So I think really the kind of the balance is making sure that whatever your product is does what it's supposed to do, right? So if it's a smart, you know, fridge, it should be the best smart fridge it can be in regards to its day-to-day functionality, but being able to kind of layer in additional features, that will come, right, based on how you're seeing it being used in the field. I think there's a lot of value in the data just because nobody's ever really had it before, right? A lot of it's been focus groups and kind of internal wars between different kind of product teams as to what, you know, what feature will actually take the cake, right? So it just needs to make sure that your product does what it's supposed to be doing and it does it well. We get a lot of questions around, oh, well, if a smart IoT lock doesn't work, then what happens? Well, you should still be able to go up to it and use it just like any other lock, right? So I think that's the important piece is don't get lost in the features and functionality that are provided by the cloud. I think those should be really seen as value added and not really, I guess, it shouldn't really hurt or impact the day-to-day functionality.
Okay. Great. I'm going to combine a few questions here for you, Alex. I think they're all kind of related. There's one that asks about, you know, carriers and set-top boxes providers squandering their market opportunity because over-the-top solutions are becoming prevalent on the Internet, which is a kind of a competing source. And then there's another question about, you know, how do I as a manufacturer align channel-wise both technology and business to the players in this market. I see cable operator commercials for smart homes. I see home improvement stores advertising for, you know, IoT-related things. Can you just kind of talk in general about what strategy should people use to align to all these different current and emerging channels, both from a technical and a business standpoint?
Well, the one word to describe what you just talked about is what Justin talked about, is it's extreme fragmentation. There is extreme fragmentation by region, there's extreme fragmentation by application or avenue into the market, and there's an extreme fragmentation in technology. And so the way that we believe this will eventually get solved is through consolidation in some of these different areas. But the thing I would suggest, or a strategy, is, you know, the strange bedfellow kind of term, meaning that, you know, you wake up in the morning as partners and you end up by the evening being competitors. And the reason I'm saying that strange bedfellow approach is you're going to need to partner with people that may not feel comfortable. Take Zonoff and Ayla partnering. I mean, this is an example where they partnered, and yeah, you know what, they compete in some areas, but they had to partner to drive interoperability. And so I can't stress enough partnerships. And when you think about channel, you know, there are multiple channels to consumers, and we do have a lot of thinking about that. I don't want to dive deep into it now, but the one thing you have to keep in mind is back to what Justin was saying earlier about user experience. If you can't find a way to seamlessly integrate into that user experience, you will not succeed. So just putting yourself on a shelf is not going to solve that, or just, you know, buying a commercial ahead of a big NCAA tournament game is not going to solve that. You need to find ways to actually show the value that you're going to bring as far as services to the consumer.
Makes a lot of sense. We did have an email question here about ARRA and smart meters. There was an initiative there about the advanced metering and where these meters would be the gateway or the active actor into the connected home, but it doesn't seem to have gotten a lot of traction from their perspective. Can you talk a little bit about why that might or might not be, Justin? Or maybe better for Alex?
Yeah, I can take a stab, and Justin, if you want to add some commentary, feel free.
Oh,
but
sorry.
I mean, so if you think about smart meters, this is another one of those that's been around for a long time, and people have pushed back and said, I don't really want my data connected on my energy usage. I don't feel comfortable with the fact that someone could drive down the street and absolutely, you know, just – pull my energy usage data. And for, you know, a while, people have looked at advanced metering infrastructure as sort of this great idea, but not really seeing it being adopted. Now, if you look over the last couple months, there's been some announcements with large utilities actually adopting these different areas. And so, you know, we think that eventually this will take off over time. But again, this is an avenue. Energy management is an avenue into the smart home, just like there are other avenues. But go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what we've seen, too, is it's really on the marketing and the business side, right? So these companies really not wanting to get tied, at least from what we've talked to all these different utility players, of not wanting to expose that data. You know, so what would happen if they were to send out a bill and the energy usage, let's say, didn't match what their bill said, right? So things like that, not kind of wanting to share that data. I think they're still trying to figure that out. But more importantly, from our perspective, this goes back to the consumers aren't convinced approach, right? I mean, it's a different branding exercise. If you're a smart metering company, like let's say, you know, if you're on the West Coast, you have a smart meter with PG&E or one of these other guys, you know, do you really want them to be the brand that controls the entire home? You know, and from what we're seeing is probably not, right? I mean, it's a different sell. It's harder. Because that's not a company, or that's not what they've been looked at to actually solve or to do, up until now. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Right. And when, there's a related – oh, go ahead.
No, the only thing I was going to say is – and that's really where partnerships have to come in, because if you're spot on. They've been pigeonholed into this, oh, well, that's just my utility. I don't want – you know, there's no need for them to control the rest of my home. But if they were able to actually provide partnerships in providing, you know, a shared offering to market, then you might be more open to it because they've positioned themselves in a different way.
Right. And there was a related question about the set-top boxes kind of in the same position. What about the set-top box and some of the emerging capabilities of that? Is that going to become the hub?
Well, you know, there was a question about, you know, the overtop solutions and set-top boxes. And the one thing that I just want to remind people of is, although there are over-the-top solutions coming, I do believe set-top box providers will have to adapt. And with that, you know, you will see them provide services for – they're already providing security management within the home, extending beyond just their normal, you know, cable providing. But the thing that I have to stress is that their installed base is higher than anyone's today. They're in every home already. So it's not that hard for them to gain access. It's just trying to keep it and continue to drive services. That would be my argument.
Right. That makes a lot of
and
sense.
Then just to chime in on that, too, if there's time. I mean, similarly, too, I think, you know, there is a great opportunity for them to provide it, especially, you know, companies like Comcast, right? They're already in the home, to what was just said. But I think what's different, at least from what I've seen, is a lot of those approaches have been closed off, right? It's not
yep.
It's not that they're trying to build an open ecosystem in terms of being able to go to the store, buying any kind of smart thing that I'd like, and being able to bring it home and, you know, have it talk to my Comcast system, right? It's more
correct.
Of, hey, you know, we're going to kind of bring a closed system to market and kind of close it off, and we want to be that smart home hub. It makes sense, but then at the end of the day, in practice, I don't know that the consumer is quite there yet to the point where they want to have a particular branded smart home platform that won't be able to scale as quickly as these new things that are being, you know, shipped to market.
Right. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. So one quick lightning round question for each of you. There's a question about IoT platform of choice. Is there one be-all, end-all, or are you seeing a variety of things, you know, kick up from the maker DIY community all the way through custom design set-top boxes and smart TVs and such? Justin?
Yep. I guess what I would say to that is, you know, depending on what you're trying to solve, I mean, I think the two things that you really got to look at is how complete the actual platform is, right? There's a lot of solutions out there that call themselves a platform, but maybe they focus on one piece more than they do the rest, right?
Exactly.
Maybe they focus on the cloud, or maybe on the hardware side, or maybe on the smartphone mobile application side, right? So you really got to look at what the offering is end-to-end. And again, this is a system, right? So you can't just look at, okay, I'm going to get this platform for the hardware side. I'm going to get this platform for the cloud. So I would say make sure it's end-to-end. and more importantly, make sure it's flexible, right? There's a lot of kind of hard-coded, very, you know, hey, we can get what you want to market, but when you want to change, it's very hard to do. So I would say those are the two things to look for.
Completely agree with Justin. The only thing I would add is that, you know, be careful because Ayla is a real platform. But like Justin said, there are a lot of players out there who are calling themselves a platform who are only serving a single function. And, you know, I always say if I had a dollar for every time I heard platform, I'd be a billionaire by now because that is the choice word right now. But you really do need to find end-to-end flexible, interoperable solutions that allow you to kind of adapt and thrive as you go forward as a business.
Great. Thanks a bunch. That brings us to the conclusion of today's eCast. I want to thank Justin and Alex for sharing their insight and expertise on IoT in the home. We at Open Systems Media and Ayla Networks want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing excellent questions today. We did not get to all of them, but I'm sure Ayla and their people will be following up. Also, reach out to them. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen and in 24 hours. The audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.